Come, sinner, come.
We welcome you to this place of worship and study tonight. We have visitors who've come our way, a number, in fact, as I've looked around. And we're glad to see you here and appreciative of the time you're investing in your life of being a part of this assembly this evening. So thank you very much for joining us for our study this evening. In the 22nd chapter of Proverbs and in verse 29, the writer there said, "Do you see a man who excels in his work? He will stand before kings. He will not stand before unknown men." That's all well and good, somebody says, but you know, maybe excellence is a little overrated. Maybe it just requires more of us than is really necessary. Maybe we could get by with a little bit less than excellence. You know, every school teacher I've ever known would tell you that they have nearly every year in their classes, they have children, usually in elementary ages, maybe middle school, maybe junior high ages. Kids that are very bright, very capable, very intellectual, in fact, who could do any kind of work that would be put before them. And yet, they kind of sandbag on the teacher. They don't really perform as well as they could, maybe because sometimes it's just not cool to be the smartest kid in the class. Maybe you don't want everybody to know that you have these abilities, because once you let them know you have those abilities, they may come to expect certain things of you that otherwise they would not expect. And so sometimes kids have to get over that and they have to work through that, and teachers can pick up on that and they can see that and they can counsel with them and help them to achieve their best and to do what their potential says they can do. It's been my observation through the years that sometimes churches have people in them that are the very same way. They may excel in other areas of life, and yet when it comes to spiritual living, when it comes to being a member of the body of Christ, they don't put forth as much effort as they might put forth at their job, or that they might put forth in their community, or that they might put forth even for a political activity or some other such thing as that. Just seems to me, as I've looked around over the years, that there are a number of Christians who just have the idea, "Well, I just want to be average. I don't want to be above average. I don't want to excel. I don't want to call any attention to me or to any ability that I might have. And, you know, if everybody were above average, then that wouldn't be good. We need some people that don't do very well to sort of even things out." And a lot of folks have decided that they just want to go with the majority and set their goal to be mediocre and to set their goal to be unremarkable. In other words, a B-flat person. Somebody nobody would ever take notice of. Somebody who nobody would ever recognize to have any skill, recognize to have any ability. And somehow or the other, we just like being unnoticed and mediocre. Well, how could we do that? I've studied that a little bit. I've looked at the way in which people have behaved through the years and figured that there is sort of a plan to being a mediocre, unremarkable Christian. You young folks tonight, I want you to pay close attention, because you're having to decide what kind of service you're going to render to God as you grow older. And you can look around and you can say, "Well, it looks like most people here do this, or most people here do that. And if I just do this much, I'll be as acceptable, you know, as everybody else here that's doing about that much." That's not to be the standard at all. That's not at all the way in which we're to judge our service to God. It's God whom we're trying to please. It's God for whom we're wanting to excel. But I want to suggest to you tonight that there are some ways that I can almost guarantee you that you'll be an unremarkable, average, mediocre Christian. Somebody that never does really do very much in the service of God. Let me tell you that if you can be convinced that your Christianity is the same thing as just going to church, that just going to church is going to be enough, that just showing up at the assembly of the church is going to make a Christian of you in the way that most other people are, and so if I can just do that much, then I'm going to be okay. Well, Hebrews 10:25 is obviously a passage we talk a great deal about and encourage people to pay attention to. We must not forsake the assembling of ourselves together. And so some people have just said, "Well, if I can be there every time the doors are open, that's great enough." And if I do more than that, that's just gravy on top of the biscuit. That's just something in addition to what I really need to be doing. Why worry about anything else? As long as I'm going to church, especially if I'm going to a congregation where they're trying to dot all the I's and cross all the T's, so to speak. They're trying to be faithful. They're trying to do what God would want. Then don't worry about excelling. Don't worry about doing anything else other than just showing up. I mean, I know that 2 Timothy 2:15 says I need to do my best to be a worker who handles the Word accurately, but surely a couple of hours a week at church is enough work for anybody. Now, this is the kind of thinking, you see, that some people have. You may be wondering, how did you know I thought that way? Well, I'm telling you, it's common. There are people who have this kind of mindset. If I could just come to church and if I could just sit and listen to the preacher, be nice and be, you know, not disruptive and act like I'm paying attention, whether I really am or not, doesn't make much difference. But if I just come to the Bible classes, well, that'll cut it for me. I mean, I know the Bereans were more noble because they studied the Scriptures daily, Acts 17:11 tells us. But who wants to be more noble when mediocrity is available for the easy taking? I know the Jerusalem Christians spent time together outside the assemblies all on their own without being assigned to do it, almost on a daily basis. Acts 2 and verse 46 tells us this. But why would we want to do that when, by the way, we get to see each other three times a week anyway? If we saw each other more than that, we might get tired of each other. Furthermore, why on earth would I ever need to apply the things that the preacher is talking about in his sermons to my family life or to my work life or to my school life or to the relationships that I have? As long as I go to church, whenever the doors are open, and especially if I just make sure that I show up at least once or twice to all of the gospel meetings and the special services like Bible schools and singings, well, all those other things are just kind of optional and they don't really make that much difference. Only those who want to excel at glorifying and loving God will try to put the Bible's teaching into practice everywhere. The rest of us who are willing to settle for just being an unremarkably average Christian, well, the rest of us can just get by with going to church. Do you see the point? Do you see what I'm trying to say? This is followed pretty closely with this idea. I'm only going to do what the preacher proves to me I absolutely have to do. And how many times do I have to attend those assemblies anyway? How many of those gospel meeting services do I really have to go to? How much time do I have to spend praying? Do I really have to teach a Bible class in my life at some point in order to go to heaven? How short can my shorts be? How revealing can my clothing be? How much alcohol would I get by with drinking? How much money could I gamble at the casino or on lottery tickets? Those are always questions that people struggle with trying to draw lines to make sure that they're being good enough to go to heaven. And so people are thinking, well, after all, I want to have a little fun in my life. I want to have a little relaxation in my life. I don't want to get too extreme with all of those morals and all of those other things. I might make people around me uncomfortable. They might not want to be with me if I'm living by certain standards. I know James 4 and verse 8 says that if we'll draw close to God, that He'll draw close to us. But drawing near to the lines I've drawn, especially if they're just a little stricter than the lines of all of my denominational friends, well, that ought to be good enough. I mean, I know that Philippians chapter 2 and verse 12 says that I need to be working out my own salvation with fear and trembling. But that's so old school. I mean, that's stuff they preached about back in the 1950s. Maybe we need to do something different. I know that Jesus taught the laws of His kingdom in the Sermon on the Mount, and that His laws told us that it's not enough just not to do certain things, but you should also avoid the attitudes that lead to those certain things. If you don't want to be a murderer, then you have to work on your emotions that would cause you to fly off the handle and through anger take someone's life. If you don't want to be an adulterer, then you have to be very careful at what you're looking at and who you're hanging out with and what the circumstances of your sexual activity might be. Yes, I know that Jesus teaches us that it's not just the doing of certain things, but the attitudes that could lead to those things that we need to be working on. But Mark, that's really just for folks that are trying to take God seriously. I just want to be average. I just want to be unremarkable. I want to be like most everybody else. I look around the room tonight and see that that's the way they are. And as long as they will accept me and as long as I can be what they are, then why should I try to be anything else? I want you to absolutely prove to me what I have to do. And if you can't prove, preacher, what I have to do, I'm not going to do it. And that'll be my attitude. May I suggest to you, thirdly, that sometimes those who want to be unremarkable choose this path. They say, well, I'm just going to fit my spirituality in around everything else that's going on in my life. I mean, we are busy, busy beavers these days. We have a lot going on in our lives. It's a pretty daunting task just to get to school every morning, isn't it? Get the kids to school. And we've got jobs. Dad's got a job. Mom's got a job. The kids have got a job that are old enough to work. We've got PTA. We've got sports. We've got camps. We've got all of our favorite TV shows that are about to come back into season here in a few days. We've all got vacations that we want to take. Not to mention that, you know, here in this environment where we live, we have major commutes to go to all these things. I mean, we drive for 2 hours to go to work in the morning, and we spend 2 hours getting home from work in the afternoon. There'd be a lot of places I could say that, and people would look at me and say, what? But you know what I'm talking about. That's life. There are a lot of people that spend 4 to 5 hours in their vehicle every day, just going to work, coming home from work. And then we've got college football season on top of us, and we've got the NFL, and we've got the NBA, and we've got golf, and well, I guess we've got to eat every once in a while. We've got to brush our teeth and take a bath and sleep in the middle of all that other activity. The fact is, preacher, all those things that the New Testament talks about were demands that were made of first century, not 21st century Christians like us who are so harried and who are so stretched and who are so pressed for time. If the average Christian out here could just fit in a little Bible reading every couple of weeks, and then when things are kind of rocky, just send up a real fast prayer when things are particularly bad, and then happen to show up, even if he's just there and not even engaged in what's taking place, to the assemblies of the church, then that ought to be pretty good. That ought to be good enough. I mean, the Lord surely ought to understand that. My boy's committed to that football team, and he's got to be sure that he makes every practice. If he doesn't make every practice, they won't let him play. My girl is in theater, and she's got to be to all of these different events. And if she's not at all those different events, they're not going to take her seriously and see that she's committed. Surely God knows. Surely God knows that I need that extra work to pay for that house that we bought. And surely Jesus realizes that studying for my exams is more important than going to Bible study on Wednesday night. You know, I know that Jesus said that we ought to seek the kingdom first and His righteousness, Matthew 6 and verse 33, and that all these things would be added to us. And I'm going to seek the kingdom first. I'm going to seek the kingdom and His righteousness right after I've made sure that my kids pass all their ACTs. And I'm going to do that right after I'm sure that my kids' college tuition is fully funded and my retirement is just where I want it to be and my cars are paid off and my work and my recreation commitments have all been fulfilled. Then I'm going to get busy and I'm going to go to work in the kingdom of God. Because after all, only those who want to excel at glorifying and loving God would seek the kingdom above some of those other things and maybe even have to leave some of those other things off in order to be righteous with the Lord, because that's what most everybody else around me is doing. That's how they're leading their lives. That's what they're doing every day. And the church accepts them, and if the church accepts them, it'll accept me. And so why do I want to be anything more than mediocre or average or unremarkable? I'll seek the kingdom first after I get some of these other earthly priorities taken care of. Let me tell you, you can be also an average Christian by saying, well, I'm never going to think enough to change my opinion or my mind about anything I have believed. I've got all the answers that I need. I figured out what I believed about all kinds of things a long time ago, so don't expect me to ever change my opinion. Don't expect me to ever restudy a question. Don't expect me to ever really re-examine what I have been taught. In fact, I'm so sure that I'm already right that there is no need for you to even try to tell me what you think about a passage or what you think about a question or what your thoughts may be or your beliefs may be. Why should I listen to you when I'm already right? That's a good way to become average. I mean, I know James 1:19 says I should be quick to hear and slow to speak. And yes, I understand that 2 Peter chapter 1, verses 5 through 8 demonstrates that I really do still have to grow in my knowledge. And I understand that over in Acts chapter 15, it shows that sometimes people who were really convinced that they were right about an issue could be wrong and that they need to change their viewpoint. But honestly, that's not me. I mean, I changed my opinion when I obeyed the gospel, when I became a Christian, and I learned the truth. And now for me to remotely even listen to somebody who disagrees with me means that I'll have to compromise some truth I might have learned back then. I mean, Apollos, I know, he stands out as a stellar example of somebody who was really, really close and really, really smart and very, very eloquent, but he was wrong about some things until somebody came along and said, hey, have you thought about this? He thought he was just as right as rain. But they taught him some things which changed his mind on baptism, for example. Something very, very essential. But only those that want to excel, you see, only those who want to stand out at glorifying and loving God know that the truth has nothing to fear, and they can listen intently and with understanding to people who disagree with them. And then they can change their views if they're proven to be wrong. But the rest of us, willing to settle for being unremarkably average, don't ever want to listen to anyone with whom we might disagree, and we certainly aren't going to change our minds about anything, except maybe over some little bitty something that doesn't make much difference at all. Let me tell you that you will encourage your averageness by never talking to anybody about spiritual things. Hey, I go to church every week. In fact, I go to church more than once, and all my neighbors think it's kind of weird that they see me going on Sunday night and they see me going on Wednesday night. We have a gospel meeting, I'm going every night. As far as I'm concerned, that's enough talk about spiritual things for a week's time. I mean, two Bible classes, two sermons, what else there is there to talk about? I mean, we just can't go overboard with this matter of talking about spiritual things. I don't get together very often with other Christians, but when I do, I don't want to talk about the Bible. I mean, I talk about the Bible with them while we're at church, but when we're not at church, let's talk about something else. And if I happen to miss class last week, I don't want to know what they studied about. If it's that important, then just bring it back up the next class period. I want to talk about things that are really important to me and things that really impact my daily life. Let's talk about our work. Let's talk about the game. Let's talk about the stock market. Let's talk about politics. Let's talk about the weather. But let's leave the Bible to the church house. I don't want things to be spiritual in my conversations that I have with non-Christians. I mean, they'll think I'm some kind of Jesus freak extremist if I do that. If I bring up the Bible, they're just going to freak out. They're not going to know how to approach me. I obviously don't want to go out on a limb and invite them to anything we're doing within the congregation. I don't want to get together with them just to read the Bible or study the Bible. If they're interested in that, they know where the church building is. They know when the service times are. I mean, we've got them out there on the sign. So let them come there. Now that's the average attitude, folks. That is the unremarkable viewpoint. And you know, people will say that who know that Jesus said that we must confess Him to others if we want Him to confess us to the Father. Matthew chapter 10, verses 32 and 33. And they look at Jesus saying that and they think to themselves, yeah, but you know, He didn't have the same religious and social climate we're facing today when He said those things. I know He wants me to acknowledge Him to other people, but surely He only wants me to do that when I'm absolutely sure that those people won't think I'm crazy. Those people won't think I'm a nut. That kind of publicity wouldn't be good for him, you see. So I don't want to harm his cause, so I'll just be quiet about spiritual things. I mean, I know the Philippian jailer and his whole household were converted in Acts 16 because Paul and Silas were willing to demonstrate their spirituality openly to other people. But come on, I mean, they were already in jail. It's not like they could have anything get worse for them, could they? I know that Paul said in 2 Corinthians 5 and verse 11 that he persuaded other people because he knew of the fear of the Lord. But maybe the fear of the Lord's a little overblown these days. We need to remember that God is love. And we don't need to be reminding anybody that God would punish people because of their disobedience. You see, those who want to excel at glorifying and loving God and bringing others to forgiveness are going to be people that are going to frequently be talking about spiritual things. The rest of us, willing to settle for being unremarkably average Christians, will just keep our mouths closed. Now finally, I want to tell you this. It's easy to be average when you don't worry about being average. When you're not bothered by the fact that nobody has ever questioned me about the unremarkable nature of my faith, when nobody has ever challenged me to do any differently or to think any differently or to behave any differently, and so we come to think, well, if I just follow this simple plan, I'll never be anything more than unremarkable and I don't have anything really to worry about. Nobody's going to challenge me about that. It may be that I never accomplish anything in the kingdom, and I'm certainly not out to accomplish anything great in God's kingdom. I'm not interested in serving Him as an elder in the church or as a deacon in the church or as a gospel preacher or as a classroom teacher. I'm not going to talk to anybody in my neighborhood about reading the Bible with me on a Tuesday night at my house. I'm not going to talk to anybody about God and my faith. I'm just going to leave them alone and let them be, and I'm going to do what I'm going to do. And some of us may even have a twinge of guilt when we say things like that and say, you know, I guess that might cost me my soul, but I'm just going to rely on God's grace. Because after all, we're all going to be saved only by the grace of God. Well, that may be true. But if you're not worried about whether or not you're just average, when you could be better, when you could do more, then you need to be very, very concerned. Here's the great thing. If you follow the plan that's on the screen there tonight, nobody else will probably ever say anything to you. It'd be rare for somebody to pull you inside and say, do you know that you could do a lot better than you're doing? Did you know that you have some latent abilities that we all can see, but you have never really shared with us? We hear about these great things you do on your job. Why don't you take those things and use them in the kingdom? Most of us will probably get by and never be threatened by what we're doing or by what we're saying. Nobody will ever feel challenged by what we do or say. Nobody will ever be made to feel uncomfortable by what we do or say. You see, if I'm an unremarkably average Christian, nobody will probably ever attack me. Nobody will castigate me. Nobody will deride me. Nobody will persecute me. Nobody will oppress me. Nobody will go to the elders and complain about me. Because I'm just a pew warmer. I never bother anybody. I never say anything. I never do anything. I show up. But those other people that want to excel and glorify and love God, well, they can do all of that they want to do. But the rest of us are just willing to settle for being unremarkably mediocre. And that way everybody will just leave us alone. Well, I'll confess to you that I don't like preaching a sermon like this. Because in the first place, I've played devil's advocate all night. I hope you understand that. Everything I have said this evening is exactly the opposite of what I believe the Bible teaches us about what we ought to do and the approach that we make to serving God. But the reason that I've done it the way I've done it tonight is because I think it helps us see the thinking of so many people who are willing to be church members, but they are not willing to be truly devoted and converted to the Lord and be a genuine disciple of Jesus Christ. Let me leave you with a couple of passages as we finish. These passages, it seemed to me, show the opposite of all of this planning that I've talked about tonight, that help us to understand we should abound in our Christian faith, not just do the bare minimum, not just try to get by, not just have one toe in the door, you know. Let me tell you, Philippians chapter 1, the Apostle Paul said, "And this I pray, that your love may abound still more and more in real knowledge and all discernment, so that you may approve the things that are excellent." Some of us talk against things that are excellent. We think halfway's okay. We think bare minimums at least meet the standard. Some of us started out on the bottom, we liked it there, so we stayed there. We never tried to be any different. We never tried to grow. We never tried to develop. It's not that we couldn't, we just didn't try. But Paul said to the Philippians that he wanted them to be able to approve those things that are excellent in order... I can't even read that. In order to be sincere and blameless, I just can't even see that back wall. Read it for me there. Go ahead. Absolutely. And that passage is not a passage that can be taken to say anything about, let's just give the Lord a half effort. Let's just do for the Lord what we barely can get done. I think also when you go to 2 Peter chapter 1, I think I'll read this for you. I've got a text here I can read from. But 2 Peter chapter 1 and verse 4, we read in that text something that's remarkable as well, because he's telling us all along about what it takes to grow as a Christian. And in verse 4 he says, "For by these he has granted to us his precious and magnificent promises, so that by them you may become partakers of the divine nature, having escaped the corruption that is in the world by lust. And for this very reason also, applying all diligence in your faith, supply moral excellence, and in your moral excellence, knowledge, and in your knowledge, self-control, and in your self-control, perseverance, and in your perseverance, godliness, and in your godliness, brotherly kindness, and in your brotherly kindness, love." That's a lot of work, sounds to me like, doesn't it, you? He's talking about things we've got to do, things we've got to add, and we've got to be very diligent. We've got to be very careful to do these things. And then he says this in verse 8, "For if these qualities are yours and abound and are increasing, they render you neither useless nor unfruitful in the true knowledge of our Lord Jesus Christ. For he who lacks these qualities is blind or short-sighted, having forgotten his purification from his former sins. So, brethren, you be all the more diligent to make certain about your calling and choosing, for as long as you practice these things, you will never stumble." And that's what we're interested in. We're interested in doing whatever it is that we have to do so that spiritually we don't stumble. Now, let me ask you this question, and the lesson's yours. Did you hear anything in this lesson tonight that reminded you of you? Did you hear anything in this lesson tonight that reminded you of anybody you know? Surely I think all of us see by now that being a Christian is a serious endeavor. If you want to follow Jesus, you've got to be determined to be faithful to Him at all costs, at all times, and in all ways. You've heard me say this before, I'll end with it. It may not take much of a man to be a Christian, but it will truly take all there is of him to be a Christian. You've got to give the Lord everything you've got. You can't sandbag, you can't hold back, you can't act like good enough is good enough. You've got to get in there and give Him everything you possibly can, because He did not withhold anything pertaining to your and my eternal salvation. He gave us everything He could give us. He pulled out all the stops, as we sometimes say. And He made sure that what we needed, we had. And even more. Give thought to what we're talking about here tonight. And I hope it'll be useful to all of us, beginning with me, trickling down to you, and then with everyone else with whom we can share this message, that we need to be diligent in our service to God. If you're not a Christian tonight, you're going to sign on, if you choose to become a Christian, to a lifelong endeavor. It's not just a one and done kind of proposition where as soon as you're baptized, we give you a towel to dry off on and that's it. There's more to be done. There's growth to take place. There's challenges ahead. But you'll be given the tools. You'll be given the opportunities. You'll be given the things that will be provided by the Lord through His Word and through His people to be faithful to the Lord so that your calling and your election can be made sure and so that there will be an entrance into that promised hope of rest that God has given all of us. Let us know how we can help you tonight as we stand together and as we sing.